everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Magic Daily Podcast. My name is Philip Rossman-Reich. I'm the co-editor of Orlando Magic Daily. And yes, we know there are two more games left on the schedule, if I can publish this before Friday's game against the Brooklyn Nets. But the Magic are headed to London. It's been a trip that I know a lot of Magic fans have been looking forward to for a very long time. Not necessarily the ones in the States, because the Magic do lose a home game in this process, but they'll be heading over to London. I know there's a lot of Magic fans over in London, and it's obviously a huge opportunity to represent the NBA and a huge opportunity to be in a kind of national spotlight game for the Magic, to be frank, over on NBA TV on Thursday. And to help us get a sense of what it's like in London and to cover the game for us a little bit, we have our good friend on the blog, our good friend James Plowright of the Lottery Mafia and a few other sites as well. We'll have him fill that in because I'm sure he writes for a few other people as well. But he'll be working for us for the next week or so, covering the team while they're in London. James, how are you doing this afternoon, evening, late night? What's the time? The time difference is what, 5 hours?
5 hours from Eastern time. Yeah, I'm actually better at telling the time in the U.S. than I am in my own country. So.
Well, when you live on the NBA schedule, that tends to be the thing. Like, New Year's Day just came, and people are like celebrating New Year, and I was just like, well, it's really just the middle of the season. I mean, the New Year doesn't start till July 1st.
No, very true, very true. But no, I'm good. Looking forward for Orlando and Toronto coming over to NBA London this year. It's always a great event. And yeah, really excited for a couple of days of work next week and to go speak to some players and coaches.
Yeah, and this event that the NBA's had, they've had a regular season game in London now for what, the past two or three seasons?
Yeah, I think it stretches back a little bit further than that. I think the last 3 years. I've been to the last two.
Okay.
Last year it was the Milwaukee Bucks versus, oh, I'm gonna test myself here, the Atlanta Hawks. It's like, I think, no, it's the Knicks, Bucks versus Knicks.
Yeah, it was
and
Bucks,
the year
Knicks.
Before it was Hawks versus Nets.
Okay.
So I've been the last 2 years, like, you know, and again, highlight of my year is the one day year I get to kind of put all that NBA knowledge or the writing I do and actually kind of speak to some guys firsthand and kind of get some of the questions in to some of these guys, which I don't normally get the opportunity to do while kind of covering the NBA from the other side of the pond.
Yeah, and of course, the Magic were supposed to play the Nets in 2012 during the lockout-shortened season, but the lockout killed that off, and I know a lot of Magic fans are disappointed because, surprisingly, the Magic have, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Magic surprisingly have a lot of fans in London, I think dating back from their trip there in 1992. They played one exhibition games against Dominique Wilkins and the Atlanta Hawks during Shaquille O'Neal's rookie season. So, you know, there's obviously a connection between the Magic and London. We'll maybe dive into that in a little bit. But, you know, having been to this event for the last 2 years and kind of being an NBA fan in London, what is this event like? What does it mean to the basketball community in the UK to have the NBA kind of set up shop for a week?
Honestly, it doesn't mean as half as much as you guys probably think it does. The NBA game is not really a game for the basketball purists. It's more of an event. London is a very cosmopolitan place. You get lots of footballers there going to watch the game, sitting courtside, and the camera, the kind of in-arena cameras on the footballers, and everyone's booing if it's a Chelsea guy and cheering if it's an Arsenal guy. You know, you have people going, like, dressed up in stilettos with their hair and makeup done, and people are generally going to kind of for the event, not to watch a good game of basketball. And it's just kind of, you know, oh, NBA's in town, let's go along, do something fun. I'd say I once took the first time I went, which was a preseason game between the Sixers and the Lakers in Manchester, which is the season before last. I actually took a quiz with me, and in the people in my kind of seating area, I went around and I asked everyone to fill in that quiz. And these were not hard questions, very basic, you know, who's leading this team and scoring, things like that. And I was actually shocked by how bad the results were myself. I knew there weren't going to be a bunch of great NBA fans, don't get me wrong, but like some of these people honestly didn't even know the names of the teams that were playing. It was that bad. So a lot of the time it's people who bought tickets as a present, something like that. There's not that many basketball purists who go, and to be honest, there's not that many who can afford to go, because tickets for this event is expensive and it sells out within an hour.
Yeah, I know. A number one question I got before tickets went on sale was, when do tickets go on sale? So I mean, hopefully there'll be a few more basketball fans, but it definitely sounds like it's kind of like, this is a perfect example right now. In Orlando, we have what's called the Florida Cup right now, and they've brought in a few pretty well-known soccer teams, some from Brazil, so I think they'll get some good fans for that. But they're definitely trying to bring in some soccer fans for the novelty of it and kind of introduce people to the sport, even if they're not quite familiar with the teams or whatnot. And, you know, to maybe the NBA's defense, they haven't sent over the best teams in the world quite yet. You know, you're not seeing LeBron come into town, I think, or like a Kobe Bryant come into London, and maybe that would bring out more of kind of the NBA, the pure basketball fans, and that's just kind of a game out there, it seems like. You know, is there any truth to that rumor that they were explaining the rules over the PA system in one of the years? I remember hearing something like that. Is the basketball knowledge that basic still over there?
It is pretty basic. I mean, I don't recall that ever happening. It certainly didn't happen in the last 2 years I was there. But you don't really kind of need it to happen. The last two games I've been to, quite frankly, have been blowouts. And the crowd literally just cheers for whichever team scores. They don't pick a side. It's just cheering for who does the coolest stuff. The most that people have seen about basketball are things from the dunk contest and the three-point contest. And there's like 1.5-minute highlight clips. People aren't going to sit down and watch a 2.5-hour game. All they're watching is like the top plays from the previous season, things like that. And people are going for those kind of moments. So when like last year, Giannis, you know, caught an alley-oop dunk and put it down, that got the biggest cheer just because it was an alley-oop. It's something that they've seen in movies. Gotcha. It's something that they've done on games. That's what you go for. Yeah, exactly. And it's all like, if there's the Harlem Globetrotters, people would probably be happy.
Gotcha. And so hopefully Scott Skiles plays Aaron Gordon a little bit, maybe a little dash of Mario Hezonja, get Oladipo out in the open court, get Victor Oladipo out in the open court.
They'll get some cheers for that, definitely.
Yes. Besides kind of the game itself, what other events happen in and around the city or involved in the sport? Do you have an understanding of kind of the side events that the NBA brings to kind of help grow the grassroots of the game in London or in England and as a whole?
Yeah, well, they don't really do too much to grow the event. So the NBA have just started a new campaign, actually in partnership with Premier League football clubs called Premier League for Sport. It's actually a campaign that I used to work on. And what they do is they get the football, the soccer clubs, as you call them, to draw kids in with their name. So Manchester United basketball competition. So people go because it's Manchester United.
Gotcha.
But then they actually coach basketball, and they've just started like a mini NBA. So kind of each team is given its own franchise. So they're called the Orlando Magic. They're called the LA Lakers. They're called the Charlotte Hornets. And they're playing in like a mini league. And that's something that has just been launched and it's being part-funded by the NBA, and they're working with Basketball England. The problem is Basketball England currently receives no funding from our government, or very, very minimal funding, after it got all cut after the 2010 Olympic Games, where GB Basketball basically failed to win a game, despite leading Spain with 1.5 minutes to go and losing out to, I think, 2 3-pointers in the last 5 minutes. They've just cut all funding. Basketball England fell apart. You speak to anyone involved in basketball at any level within the United Kingdom, and people just talk about how Basketball England is a joke. You know, their best players, Luol Deng, hasn't played for GB Basketball in the last 5-6 years because GB Basketball can't pay for their insurance.
Yeah.
The whole feeling of basketball in England right now is just, it's not a positive one. The NBA have just started, like I said, this mini NBA event, But in terms of actually increasing participation, they're not that involved. They do side events, like they always take one of the NBA teams when they come to London to Chelsea's ground. They've done it the last 2 years, and they get pictures with Didier Drogba and different footballers and stuff like that. And they kind of like crossing over sports because, again, that picks up more promo. It gets more hits.
It gets more people in the stadium and gets, you know, yeah.
Exactly. And they have an NBA Cares event where they'll, you know, bring kind of people from the local community in, and they'll get some of the NBA players involved in that. And that's always great to watch every year. But they really haven't branched out that much. And I think because the NBA realized, I don't think there's a massive pool of talent in the United Kingdom. Obviously, there's a lot of money there, which is something that probably intrigues them. But I think things like NBA League Pass, getting people to watching basketball is probably the first key. They're not really helping people get involved playing basketball.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really interesting because, I mean, I think most people in the U.S. and, you know, maybe even around the world see basketball as kind of the growing sport around the world. I think most people, I mean, I would argue this, that basketball is probably the second or third most popular sport in the world. It's certainly the most popular American sport around the world. It's interesting to bring up this comparison because I do think that a lot of what the NBA is trying to do here is economically driven, to put it lightly. They do see a growth market in England, in the UK, to kind of build their business and grow their business. And you hear it every few years that the NBA wants to put some teams in Europe. And London's always mentioned, even though there isn't the strongest basketball culture there. Is this event in any way similar or dissimilar to what the NFL tries to do with London? Because, I mean, I know in the U.S., especially in this part of the country, because the Jacksonville Jaguars always seem to be give up a home game to London just because they're not the strongest home draw in Jacksonville, Florida. And Shad Khan, of course, owns the greatest football team in all of London in the Fulham Football Club. But is it any way similar or dissimilar to what the NFL does with the London games that they have?
Very similar. In fact, when I generally describe it to people and I tell them I'm going to NBA London, sometimes people look at me with a big black bit of a blank face, and I say, right, you know what the NFL does where they play a game in London? And people go, yeah. I'm like, it's that but basketball. That's how I have to describe it. The NFL is, for me, has done a better job so far kind of pitching itself over here. I think it's a more, not in terms of participation, I would definitely say basketball is a higher participation sport than American football in this country, but in terms of people tuning in to watch or going to attend, I definitely see NFL as being ahead of the NBA, why for that? I'm not quite sure, if I'm being honest. I personally think the NBA is a more exciting game, and I've had a lot of people tell me the NFL is too long, it's boring, it's too stop-start, and the NBA is quite different to that. But so far, that definitely seems to kind of be the running theme.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see these kind of quintessentially American sports try and push their way into that marketplace, for sure. Getting into a little bit of this game, as I mean, we were talking a little bit beforehand about, you know, how, you know, you obviously write about the team. How do you follow the NBA from London? I know we got a 5-hour time difference, so, you know, games start at around midnight. I know I have a lot of followers in the UK. You know, they're begging for earlier start times. I think actually the Magic had a 5 p.m. start time on a random Saturday because they were put in the international television window for you know, games all around the world when they played the Kings earlier. But what's the experience like as a fan, if you are an NBA fan, trying to follow the NBA?
It can be tough. I mean, I have League Pass, which makes life a lot easier. So, you know, I can stay up till 2, 3 a.m. and watch games. Or if I can't, I can wait until the day, come home from work, and I can catch up on it the next day, and it's all there for me. I understand I'm in the minority. The majority of people, especially if you're getting into basketball, aren't just going to go and buy League Pass because it's very expensive. Only until I think about 2 years ago, a channel over here called BT Sport started showing NBA on a Sunday afternoon, which obviously they have the earlier tip-offs in the USA, and that's been a massive help, actually, getting people interested in the league. Sunday afternoon, evening, there's not a lot of sport on. Soccer normally finishes about 5 or 6 p.m. There's no competition on at that time. And, you know, it's normally generally good games picked on the Sunday afternoon, not always, but generally. So that's kind of been, that's a lot of people's kind of way in. It's just catching up on BT Sport. And then from there, people's interest generally seems to snowball. In terms of staying up with the game, again, a lot of people use a lot of websites with the websites like FanSided, trying to feel like they're part of the team. Because that's one thing over here, that you're very cut off from any other NBA fans. There's not, you know, I don't have many friends who follow the NBA. So in terms of my interaction, and if I want to have intelligent conversation with people, I have to reach over to the USA to have that. Because if I wait around to kind of speak to someone about basketball who actually understands anything, then I'm going to be waiting kind of months. So there's a lot of crossover with the US media. A lot of people will go there to get that. But in terms of watching the game, it is difficult, especially with that time difference. Games generally start at midnight. This is Eastern Conference, Eastern time. Start at midnight here. They finish 2:30 a.m. God forbid an overtime. I know at times, I'm sure many European fans just want the game to be over.
I think sometimes when games go to overtime, American fans want the games to be over. Certainly the journalists do.
Yeah, especially if you've got deadlines to meet. So,
yes.
And then West Conference, I think that's one thing that I really see is that a lot of these Western Conference teams aren't getting the European following that they could do because they're so much harder to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the team that I watched, the Hornets, we've been playing in Golden State and Phoenix recently, and the Golden State game didn't start till 3:30 a.m. my time. You know, and how am I going to watch that? Doesn't matter if it's a Friday, doesn't matter if it's a Saturday. There's no way I'm going to watch that. So obviously the good teams right now is the Warriors and it's Stephen Curry, so they are more popular than they were. But I still think there's a big draw to these Eastern teams, the Cavaliers, the Magic, the Bulls, the Raptors, all Miami Heat especially, the Nets, the Knicks, because they are more watchable, they're more accessible. And also, from people going from the UK to America, those places are a lot closer. You know, a lot more people go to Florida on holiday. They go, you know, for a weekend visit to New York and they catch a Knicks game. You can't just nip over to LA because
you know,
it goes from 6 hours up to 9 to 10 hours. And you kind of, that may seem trivial, but it does make a difference. And it's more expensive to fly there as well. So you're going to kind of go to that place that's closer to you geographically.
Yeah. And I think certainly it's no coincidence that you've seen only East Coast teams or Eastern Conference teams make that trip over to London for this midseason game. Obviously, it's been a little disruptive it will be a little disruptive to the schedule. The Magic, I think, are coming off a stretch now where they've played 6 games in 9 days. They've got one more back-to-back before they make the trip to London. They're flying over Monday. They play Thursday. They'll have Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, and then they'll play again Monday on Martin Luther King Day in Atlanta, actually. So they got to take a little quick trip up north after the trip across the pond.
Just a quick thing I want to touch on because we didn't get to earlier is one reason I really think the Magic have so many British fans is Dwight Howard. Not just because of his play, but his performance in the dunk contest back in 2010, am I wrong?
It would have been 2000.
Superman year.
It would have been 2008. I think it was the 2008 dunk contest.
That got around. That managed to get into circles that didn't like basketball.
Really?
That kind of really brought life back to the dunk contest. People going, you know, what is this amazing event? And if I go into a Foot Locker store now, you've got Carmelo jerseys, LeBron jerseys, Steph Curry jerseys, and for some reason, you'll still have Dwight Howard jerseys. And you'll
Magic
have
Dwight Howard jerseys or Rockets Dwight Howard jerseys?
Magic Dwight Howard jerseys. Because you still see them around now. If I go to the game, I guarantee there will be more Dwight Howard Magic jerseys at NBA London this year than any other jersey there. I can guarantee it because he really was a cult hero, Superman. Like, he's just someone, for whatever reason, he really kind of translated and became a very popular over here. And I think that's one of the reasons there are so many Orlando Magic fans. And I think if you speak to a lot of them, they'll say, you know, some of the older ones, yes, the roots might go back to the 1990s when they came over. But the younger ones, I wouldn't be surprised if Dwight Howard was their way in, watching him in the dunk contest and it kind of building on from there.
That's really, really interesting to me, because, I mean, I know, I mean, they probably didn't follow, you know, step by step the entire Dwight mare that happened in the 2012 season, actually the year they were supposed to go over to London. And I know a lot of fans were really excited, you know, not only to see the Magic, but certainly to see a potential championship contending team at the time in that Magic squad. And yeah, no, that's really kind of surprising me. I mean, I know like the highlights and dunking is a way in for a lot of people, just to be amazed with the athleticism of these players. But yeah, I mean, even like it's been seven years since that dunk contest, and that kind of blows my mind that you say that.
I mean, if I was to show someone who didn't like basketball and I say, do you want to see something cool?
Yeah,
that Dwight Howard dunk contest is one of the things I show them.
Absolutely.
And I think that's just what it is. It's a really simple little thing, but that's it.
So, I mean, so then when, you know, we'll get into the current team a little bit more in a bit, but would that mean that a guy like, you know, Victor Oladipo, who was in the dunk contest last year, he didn't win it like Dwight did in 08, but would Victor Oladipo be the guy that's going to be on all the posters, you know, dunking and you know, people are going to be begging him for, you know, to throw out a 360 at some point during the game or during a practice or during some type of session where the public is able to watch him? Or, so, I mean, the Magic have some dunkers. The Magic have some dunkers now.
They do, but no one, if I'm being honest, no one that the general public are going to know.
Yeah.
That's one of the things when I went to the Sixers-Lakers game. I said, can you just write, when I handed out the quiz to people around me, I just said, look, can you just list who's on the roster? And about 7-8 of the 30 sheets I handed out had Kobe, and that was it. And
yeah,
they didn't even know his second name. It was just Kobe.
Gotcha.
So,
the star power definitely still holds a lot. And frankly, the Magic don't have any right now as the second returns of All-Star balloting revealed pretty straightforwardly.
Unfortunately so.
That's still just boggle. That's just mind blowing. It's not mind blowing that dunking is the way people get into the game, because that's the case even here in the U.S. Like, people will go out and see a great player or a great dunker just to see him do something amazing. I mean, Vince Carter still, I think, gets a lot of cheers around the league because of what he did in that dunk contest. So I guess it's not too surprising. But hopefully, Tobias Harris isn't offended to be seeing a lot of number 12 jerseys in the building that aren't his. Looking at this matchup a little more specifically, because it is a regular season game, and you know, you're someone that does follow the NBA, and we got into it a little bit there. Is there any buzz about the teams that are coming specifically, or is it just the fact that there's an NBA game?
You know what there is buzz about is that you get a lot of people. You don't just get British people going to NBA London. You get a lot of European people from Africa. I've met people from South America who traveled across, because it's a regular season game as well. It carries a certain level of prestige, which the diehards from kind of internationally, when they get to play in Milan and they play in Brazil like the Magic did earlier in the year, the diehards go and they're like, this is cool for an experience, but this isn't an NBA game. And some of those do make the trip. So a lot of the time, a lot of the foreign and the international players get extra cheers. So like of, you know, Vucevic, Evan Fournier, I wouldn't be surprised if those two marry Hezonja. You know, they'll have a lot of media. They'll have probably media coming over from Croatia to interview Hezonja, media coming over from France to interview Fournier. And then kind of with the Raptors as well, they've got, you know, the likes of Bismack Biyombo on their team, Bebe, Lucas Nogueira. I'm probably murdering some names right now.
No worries. I think they sound okay.
Luis Scola, Jonas Valanciunas. So the Raptors are another team which are kind of full of international guys as well. So I think that's something the NBA probably look at, because they like to have a nice selection of kind of nationalities there to represent. So I think that's one thing that people are looking forward to is, you know, seeing a guy from their country. You know, that's a really kind of big thing for a lot of people. And I've met people who've come over before literally just to see one guy.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think that's the case in a lot of ways. And it feels like to me, I mean, I don't know what Toronto's tourism numbers are, but I would imagine that, you know, there is obviously a connection culturally between Canada and the United Kingdom. For Orlando itself, I know the UK is the location that the second most amount of foreign tourism comes from, after Brazil. Brazil actually, I think, passed the UK for most visitors to the Orlando area in the last 2-3 years. And so it wouldn't surprise me if the Magic are kind of they've been angling this trip for a while now, obviously. It wouldn't surprise me if they were looking to do much of the same thing that they've done with Brazil and get, you know, ticket packages surrounded on holiday, or be able to get with travel agents to have Magic tickets included in travel packages to the Orlando area. And obviously bringing your product directly to the people to show them in your community, I think helps do that. There is this weird connection between Orlando and UK and London, whether it dates back to 92 or something else. Do you get a sense that there's a little, not extra buzz that it's Orlando, but that, you know, people are a little more intrigued because of where the Magic come from? I mean, maybe I'm just making all this up. Who knows?
No. So you're absolutely right that a lot of British people go over to Orlando. There's a guy who I know right now who went over to the Orlando Pacers game from the UK recently. And his family went on holiday to Orlando, and he got media credentials to go to the Orlando Magic game. So there's definitely a link. You probably did. I might be going to Orlando myself this summer. It is a popular place to go. What I think Orlando have done is, I think they've probably got ahead of the British public, because I think the British public probably won't even put two and two together that this team from Orlando, where they've gone on holiday and, you know, a popular tourist destination, is coming to London. But once they go to Orlando, they'll think, oh, that team came to London a few years ago. So I think Orlando being really clever about just getting ahead of it, I would not be surprised if they did incorporate ticket packages and stuff like that. I know it's one thing that a lot of people do when they go to the USA. They go to the city and they try and catch a baseball game, an NBA game, or an NFL game, whatever's on, depending what time of year. I think it's something that Orlando probably have been angling towards because of that kind of tourist side of things. Definitely. No, I think you've got a good point there.
Yeah. Sorry for the little sidetrack there. It's obviously not your expertise. Your expertise, though, is the NBA. When you look at where the Magic are, you know, someone, you know, again, as someone who maybe doesn't even watch them every day, as someone who kind of follows them from afar and is getting ready to cover them, what do you see in this year's Magic team? You know, obviously for the Lottery Mafia, you've been following them a little bit for the last 3 years. Hopefully not as much this year, but what do you see in this team as they get ready to make this trip and play in this game?
Coming into the year, I really liked where Orlando was in terms of the prospects they had. I wasn't sold on their shooting, and I was also worried that they're a very young team, and I thought, you know, I think they're going to be an interesting team this year and they'll probably get to 30 odd wins or so, but they're not going to really be in the race for a playoff spot. They have kind of passed my expectations. I think they've definitely brought in some more kind of the veteran players. The younger guys aren't playing as big a minutes. Hezonja, Aaron Gordon aren't kind of integral parts of the team. You're seeing more Channing Frye. You're seeing a bit more Andrew Nicholson. So Evan Fournier has obviously kind of stamped his mark on the starting shooting guard spot. So they're a team that have definitely passed my expectations. There's some things that have surprised me, like, you know, Fournier taking the starting shooting guard spot, Oladipo going to the bench. I wasn't sure how that was going to work out. I know Fournier got really hot last year towards the start of the year and cooled off significantly in the second half of the season. And I've kind of been waiting for that to happen again, but it doesn't seem to be quite happening just yet. So maybe he's going to kind of keep on playing at this similar level for the rest of the year. But no, I think Scott Scars has done a great job. They've been a good defensive team up to the last kind of 10 games or so. where they've really slid. I think not having Elfrid Payton for the last four or five has really hurt that. I read an article on Orlando Magic Daily recently, kind of just looking at the on-off numbers with Payton, and you know he was always a good defender coming out of Louisiana Tech. Is that right?
Louisiana Tech?
Lafayette. And that was one of the things he was going to be known for. So, yeah, I they've managed to get around their lack of shooting. I think Fry coming back and playing well, Fournier coming to fruition a little bit more, Shabazz Napier giving a little bit off the bench at times, although inconsistency, I think that has helped. But we saw the other day where they, I think, only hit 6 of 33 on threes or something against the Pacers. Mm-hmm. They are still not a good outside shooting team. And that pick and roll defense right now, they're really struggling with, especially with Vukovic in the middle. And that's something I actually kind of want to speak to you about is, despite how effective Vukovic is in what he does well, can the team get past the point of his defensive shortcomings? I mean, that's something curious. You watch every day. I mean, you might not have an answer. You might be trying to figure that out yourself, but he just seems like he's one of those guys where he puts up great stats and he is effective on the block, but can the team get past it having him at the heart of the defense?
Yeah, I think that's probably the one. There's a lot of key questions to this team, and that's one of them. And I think when the Magic were looking at giving him an extension and preparing for his free agency, it was a question that they really needed to come to grips with. Is like we've got a center, and you know, a lot of, I think, the rebuild that the Magic did, that the Magic just have started going through, was a lot of it was, let's not repeat the mistakes of the past. When Dwight Howard wanted his way out, we're not going to lose him for nothing. We're going to trade him before he hits free agency and make sure we get something in return. When they made that trade, they said, we're not taking Andrew Bynum. We're not going to make the Grant Hill mistake and bring in someone on crutches and be on the hook for a lot of money on a guy who's never going to play for us. And they did that. And, you know, they brought in a nice young player, Nikola Vucevic, and obviously he puts up points and he produces. But that defense is hard to get around. And I think he's improved on defense. At the beginning of the year especially, I thought he was really good. He is not a shot blocker, and he's never going to be. But when he gets into a position, he's fine. The problem is, laterally, he's still not great. He doesn't get to his position fast enough at times, and that causes problems. And in the pick and roll, especially with speedier point guards, he's really struggled with John Wall. He tries to catch guys instead of hedging and pushing up on the screen to keep the dribble penetration. And when you let a guy like a John Wall go north-south really fast, he's going to burn you, even if you're in the right spot necessarily. And so it's something that the Magic have had trouble getting around. And, you know, when you look at his numbers, it's really interesting to me because they're significantly better with him offensively and significantly worse with him defensively. And the trade-off, it seems, for the Magic has been, can we play defense okay enough that the offense will win out at the end? And for the first 20 or so games, the answer was yes. Yes, we can. We can play well enough offensively with Vucevic on the floor, or play well enough defensively with Vucevic on the floor, that his offense will win the day, or that, you know, the offense will play well enough that whatever mistakes we make on defense, we'll make enough good plays on defense to win that battle. The last 10 games, I don't think that's been the case, and I think it's becoming more and more apparent that there are some issues that the Magic need to work around. And frankly, as I've tried to tell a lot of people, that's part of what this season was about, was learning what this team is, how they can play in a successful winning environment, and figuring out which players, you know, they need to keep on the roster and build around, and which players, you know, you may be a little more willing to let go. I don't think they should let Vucevic go until they have a feasible center lined up to replace him, whether that's through a trade, through the draft, through free agency, whatever. Go ahead.
So, I mean, it's really interesting because all the things you describe Vucevic's shortcomings being are the same as what Al Jefferson's shortcomings are in Charlotte, which is the team that I feel very closely, follow very closely. And the way Steve Clifford got around that is by not trying to ask Vukovic, but not trying to ask Jefferson to do things that he can't do because he just can't do them. It's not that he doesn't try hard enough. If you can't jump, if you can't move,
and Vucevic is the same. And Vucevic is the same way. It's not that he isn't trying.
It doesn't come natural to them. What Clifford did, you got two really good. Well, this is last year. You had Gerald Henderson as your shooting guard. Mm-hmm. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is your small mm-hmm. forward. He pretty much left his wings out on an island when defending on the perimeter. He did not ask for the big to step up at all. There was a lot of one-on-one defending on the wings. There wasn't a lot of help. Now, both of those guys were good enough defensively that could work, and the Hornets had, you know, a top-down defense for the most of the year. Obviously, MKG being out this year, it's been a mixture of PJ Harrison and Nick Batum, which at times did work well before Al Jefferson got injured. And again, I look at Orlando and I think, great, you've got Victor Oladipo and Aaron Gordon, two really good defenders at both positions, even though Gordon might be more of a four, which I know is probably another debate.
That's another debate. He's a forward.
So, but then you look at who's logging major minutes with Vukovic, and it's Fournier and Harris, who aren't the kind of guys who can do what the Hornets have done. At the same time, if you have Oladipo and you have Gordon in, then your shooting probably just isn't good enough to run a functional NBA offense, especially with Alfred Payton as well.
Yes.
So I think there are issues there. I do think there's a way around it, but I think you've got to have some kind of defense-first wings. And, you know, you've already got Alfred Payton as your defense-first point guard, you know, like we discussed earlier. He's really important to the Magic's kind of really kind of locking in on defense. But getting some more defensive orientated guards who can play with Vukovic, I think, is very important for the team, for him to succeed. If they want to go a different route, they can do, but I agree. I mean, how many centers are there out there better than Vukovic who are going to become available for the Orlando Magic?
There's not many. I mean,
unless it's potluck in the draft, I mean, it's not going to happen. So,
I've had fans say, "Oh, the Magic should go after Al Horford this summer." I'm like, "Yeah, they should." Like Al Horford, even if you keep Vucevic, Al Horford at power forward is not a bad option to have because both Horford and Vucevic can step out and shoot jumpers. So I don't think they get in their way as much. But at the same time, I don't think Al Horford's leaving Atlanta. Like, yeah, you can throw all the money you want at him, but the Magic tried that with Paul Millsap, who I think would have also really worked well with Vucevic at the power forward position. And, you know, it's still up to him to decide where he's going to go, and I don't see anyone willingly leaving that Atlanta situation unless they get lowballed on a contract. Like, there are limited options, and frankly, the Magic have Vucevic on such a good deal. You know, the extension that he signed with the Magic last summer is such a good deal for the Magic. Paying Vucevic $12 million a year. Like, even if you don't think he's your center of the future, you pay him that because it's such a bargain. I like Nick a lot. I do think he's a good and valuable player. I don't know if he's a center on a championship or a necessarily a winning team at a very, very high level. And so when he signed that extension, I said he's probably not going to finish that extension in Orlando because that deal is just such a good deal to trade. You know, when that piece, you know, comes into place, whether a lot of Magic fans like to point to DeMarcus Cousins as someone that they could potentially target if things fall apart there. You know, there. It always happens. Someone comes available.
Do Orlando fans not learn? Do they just love taking on these kind of big men with odd personalities? Come on now.
I mean, I said the same thing. It's like, A, I say Sacramento's not trading him. And B, he's got some issues. And if you don't have a veteran in the locker room that he can really respect and grow from, I mean, that's the shame. Like, I think I said this to a buddy of mine a few days ago. If you draft DeMarcus Cousins and not draft him to the Kings and put him in an organization that is functional, you know, I think he matures a little bit. He doesn't have the same kind of on-court outburst that he has. He's obviously very, very talented. He's one of the best players in the league, or certainly one of the best centers in the league. But having him in a situation where he can kind of run freely without any veteran leadership, without any, you know, kind of guidance in what it takes to make it in the NBA, because Sacramento is just such a mess as an organization, you know, from the time Cousins got there to now. I think he's had like the average length of his coaches is like a year, a little bit more than a year. Like there's just been, there's so much upheaval. Of course he's going to act this way. Like he's already.
I also cannot see Cousins and Scott Skiles.
No, I can't either. It would be entertaining just to see them butt heads. But at the same time, he's obviously a very talented player. I don't think you can ignore the talent that he has, but, you know, the way he's been brought up, this is kind of who he is in the NBA too. And you know, you can't be that desperate for a star player. You got to wait for the right one. I tell this to my followers all the time. You know, if you want to be stuck in mediocrity, you take the first star you can get. If you want to truly win a championship, you got to be patient. You got to draft the right guy, or you got to convince the right star to come to Orlando or to come play for your team. Team building is not easy, and people do get annoyed, I think, that it takes a little longer than they want. But the question is, do you want to win championships or do you want to just make the playoffs? And the Magic are, I think, in a really interesting time right now because they're competing for the playoffs for the first time since Dwight left. And there are a lot of people pushing to make trades to make the team better in 2016, but might hurt the team in 2017 or 2018.
No, you've got to stay patient with this group. Exactly. It's so young. I think you're going to get so much development from within. Yes. And I think you've got to at least give them a little bit of time for that. I mean, under Jacques Vaughn, who personally I think was if not the second worst coach in the year last year.
You can say that. I did completely agree. I mean, he was a good coach for the first 2 years when the team just needed a pat on the back. Tell them they're all right. Keep doing the right things. You will get better. Not necessarily the team will get better. You will get better. And then when they asked him in his third year, okay, time to start winning, he couldn't flip that switch. He couldn't demand accountability because, you know, he was the guy that patted everyone on the back for 2 years.
Yeah.
So he had the carrot. He didn't have the stick.
Yeah, I just think the Magic need to stay patient. I don't think they need to rush into any trades. You know, win now moves are pointless because even if you add a good veteran to this team, they are still really too young and inexperienced and don't really have enough skill level yet. Like we said, they've still got a lot of athletes who need kind of refining of their skills in Payton, in Oladipo, in Gordon, in Hezonja.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they need to learn how to win too. That's the other thing. Like I've tried to say this as delicately as I can when I'm interviewing Coach Skiles. You know, this is a group that's learning how to win for the first time. Like being over 500 is a new experience to them. Having teams game plan for them is a new experience to them. Feeling the pressure of a must-win game to stay in a playoff race will be a new experience to them. Hopefully, in February and March. There's a lot of learning and a lot of growing up to do, and they're going to make mistakes. And I think right now we're seeing some of the first mistakes and missteps that they're making in this stretch for the last 2-3 weeks. One of the things I think that has to be talked about with this team and it is that decision to bring Victor Oladipo off the bench. You obviously didn't follow the team day to day like I do. You're still kind of maybe getting a sense of the arguments, but what is your general impression on Victor Oladipo as a player himself and the decision to bring him off the bench, you know, accepting these last two games where he started for Elfrid Payton?
It divides Magic fans.
So trust me, you're just adding to the debate.
I mean,
there.
I think Oladipo hasn't made the strides we'd hope he has for me personally. I think after seeing what he did in his rookie year, at this point, I'd be expecting a little bit more out of him. More consistency, better finishing at the rim. I never thought that was really going to be an issue. I think maybe splitting him and Payton up might be the best thing for both of them, because Oladipo did spend a lot of the time with the ball in his hand in his first 2 years in the league. I know they played him at point guard at times, even during his rookie season. And Payton likes to have the ball as well. And Fournier is a nice complement to that, a nice outside shooter, you know, does well working off screens. And having someone to kind of initiate more offense in the second unit, it really did work for the Magic earlier in the year. Now, is Oladipo happy with the role? He was always described as a consummate teammate, consummate pro. At the same time, I know he's a fiery competitor, and I mean, you'll probably know better than me. Obviously, he won't say anything about, you know, saying like, you know, yeah, oh, I'm really happy to come off the bench. But reading between the lines of what he says, do you think there's any frustration there from Oladipo himself?
I mean, he's everything he said publicly has been, you know, I'm going to do what I need to do for my team.
Of course,
and I think that's all you can expect. But I do sense some frustration. You know, I think he believes in himself. He's a very self-confident person. You know, he believes he's going to be an all-star in this league. He believes he's going to be great in this league. And he knows that this is a really important year for him with, you know, he'll be eligible to have extension talks this summer. And right now, you know, you can't imagine it.
And Fournier will be a free agent.
And Fournier will be a restricted free agent.
So that's going to be interesting because they're going to affect each other there.
It's a huge decision this organization has to make. At the beginning of the season or at the beginning of the off season, I kind of floated it out there, like, you know, because it was interesting. We asked Fournier at closing interviews in April whether he thought he was going to get an extension, whether he'd like an extension. He said, you know, I'd love to get an extension, but only stars get extensions. Like, I'm not expecting one. I got to prepare for next year. Like, I'm playing for playing for a contract, essentially. And like about August or so, you know, I started floating the idea out, like looking at how the NBA landscape was coming up and the salary cap was increasing. I was like, you know, and then remembering how important Evan Fournier was to the team, like they played a lot better with Fournier on the floor, and it was easy to forget it because he missed so much time throughout the season. But I remember floating the idea out there in August, like the Magic should probably try and get Evan Fournier to sign an extension now because he's probably going to be priced out of their price range next summer when he becomes a restricted free agent. And a lot of that was said with the thought of Victor Oladipo is going to make the star leap. Like, he's clearly the guy on this team that can do a lot of different things. You know, he's a really versatile player. He gets others involved. He plays good defense. He's the guy that this team should push as their star. And so the Evan Fournier Victor Oladipo debate decision. And
do you think they would bring them both back? Do you think that's a possibility?
I think it's possible. It depends on what number Fournier ends up coming in as and what number Oladipo comes in as.
Do you think
they've got to make decisions on these guys soon?
Do you think they would like to both come back if they know the other one is coming back? If you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I think Evan would be fine coming back either way. I would get the sense that Oladipo, because he believes that he can be an all-star and wants to go someplace, that he can be one. Obviously, he may not have control over that as a restricted free agent, but I think he would like to go. I think he wants to be a starter. I think he expects to be a starter. And, you know, I don't think there's much outward frustration, but I think, you know, I think Skiles has even said it, like, yeah, he'd be a little worried if Oladipo weren't upset that he's coming off the bench.
Of course, of course.
You know, this...
I've got a question on Oladipo,
okay,
by the way.
Go for it.
Is he as good defensively as we thought he was going to be coming out of Indiana?
Yes, I think he is. Skiles has said he's an all defensive player, and some of that might be trying to pump up his confidence and show that he still believes in Oladipo as a player. But when Oladipo really gets down and dirty to play defense, like he can suffocate, you know, anyone. Like. The game they played the Nets, and I know the Nets aren't the greatest model, but he just destroyed Shane Larkin. Like I felt sorry. I mean, Shane Larkin's a local guy in Orlando, and I felt terrible for him because Oladipo just ate him alive. Like Larkin couldn't do anything, and Oladipo will have just runs of possessions where he just locks his man down. If he has a weakness defensively still, and I think it's one that's fairly common for young players. It's that he tends to overhelp and get over-aggressive going for steals. He's been a little bit better of that on the ball. In help-side defense, he'll suck into the paint a little bit too late and be late coming out to the three-point line. And that's hurt the Magic on occasion. So they lost a game to the Hawks because he left Kyle Korver open in the corner for three while he was trying to stop the ball in the paint, which... you know, was a mental mistake on his part. He recognized it after the game. He said, that loss is completely on me. I left Kyle Korver wide open on multiple occasions.
Yes, because it's never a good idea.
Because I was digging into the paint. I just forgot who I was playing. But at the same time, you know, yeah, yes, in that individual sense, it was his fault. You know, he made the same mistake a few times, and it was clear to see that he did it. But at the same time, I was like, well, if you're playing any other player or any other team, that's exactly what Skiles wants you to do. He wants you to dig into the paint and rush out to close out. But of any of the players that have taken to Scott Skiles' defensive scheme and done everything Skiles has asked on the defensive end, Victor Oladipo has done that. He has been every bit as good defensively as I think we all imagined he could be. Unfortunately, to be a star in this league and the way the league is set up and the way the Magic's lineup is set up, if they had a different point guard, you know, I think Oladipo is probably still starting. It's the fact that Elfrid Payton is also really good and really important to this team, and he can't shoot either. And you need to have a shooter next to him. And you know, maybe if the Magic had a three, who was a bit of a better shooter than Tobias Harris, or you know, it would help. But you know, Evan Fournier's shooting is just so valuable to this team that it's still, even though Fournier's kind of gone through a little bit of a cold spurt lately, it still feels like it's the right decision because Oladipo is just so inefficient at the rim. You know, when you're shooting less than 50% at the rim, it's hard to give you the ball and ask you to use a quarter of the possessions trying to do that.
And last thing before I let you get me back on topic, because I'm enjoying picking your brain.
No, no worries.
I'm going to say something that's probably going to get me pretty unpopular amongst a lot of fans.
Hot take alert.
Well, if I could go back to summer right now, and if I was GM, I wouldn't have hired Scott Brooks. Scott Skiles. I would have hired Scott Brooks.
And, you know, I think you'll find people who say that too. I don't think that's controversial. As good as Scott Skiles has been getting this team to this level that they're at now, I think a lot of Magic fans still wanted to see a coach that the team could possibly grow with. I was one of them. I was someone who was saying, you know, for the Magic, they should try and find someone that can grow with the team and be that coach that can not only get them
with a resume for development and winning.
Exactly. Not just
one half, which is what Skiles' resume kind of says.
Exactly. Now,
you know, I can get a team to play hard and to win.
And the thing is,
the problem is now the Magic are doing well. Skiles is fitting exactly what everyone says he would do,
which is
he'll get the team to play well and compete. And now everyone's just waiting for but it's all going to blow up in his face because, you know, the team are going to outgrow him, blah, blah, blah. And that narrative is going to grow until it happens.
And in fairness to that, you know, I know I said this, and I think a number of other people said this. As long as you know that's what's going to happen, it's fine.
The thing is, I don't even know if it will definitely happen. I think we have this thing as fans where we always think coaches are the same, right? Okay, you imagine, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a player. You imagine Dirk Nowitzki when he first came in the league, right?
Yeah.
The first year or two, he didn't do much. But, you know, midway through his career, he's one of the best players in the NBA.
Yes.
Coaches can develop as well, right? Scott Skiles, he's been in Milwaukee.
But the thing is, he's been in
Chicago. Has he learned from his mistakes? Is he going to change his approach? Now, can he add that other side of it to himself where not only can he get his team to play hard, but he doesn't alienate his team, he doesn't alienate his staff? You know, I just don't think we should always assume that the same thing is going to happen at the same place, just like
learn. We certainly shouldn't assume it. And Skiles waited for the right job to come back. Like, he wasn't actively seeking jobs. You know, if people wanted him, they came to him. So, and the Magic have a special relationship with Skiles because Skiles played in Orlando for so long. The thing with Skiles to me was he's been an NBA coach now for 13 years. You know, I say this about NBA players too. Like, at a certain point, you are the player you're going to be. People who and I'll bring up Dwight again. People who in Dwight's seventh year were asking him to do more post moves and to be the slow post threat like Hakeem and all that. I was like, guys, he's 7 years into the league. He's 7-8 years into the league. He is the player he's going to be right now, and he's a damn good player. Asking him to be something that he's not is not a he's not going to live up to that expectation because it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks in the NBA, like especially as you're getting near your peak. It's tough to add new things to your game. You can, but it's not ever that maybe necessarily going to be who you are. I mean, even LeBron James. LeBron James worked tirelessly to add a three-point shot, to become a better three-point shooter. But when you look at how teams play him and you look at how he's playing so far this season, he's still not a fantastic jump shooter. He's better, but you want LeBron James to beat you with his jumper. Game 7 of the 2013 NBA Finals was one of the most brilliant performances I've ever seen because San Antonio pretty much laid, they had Boris Diaw laying off of him saying, LeBron, take as many 15, 18 foot mid-range jumpers that you want. We're just going to contest those and not let you get into the paint. And they did that all game, and LeBron just made every single one, especially in that fourth quarter, just made every single one. And the Spurs were okay living with that because the numbers and the odds say that he's not going to make that shot. And mm-hmm. I mean, you look at him now. He's the worst shooter in mid-range in the NBA right now. And that's still the way that you let him beat you. That's still the way you defend him. And like, to bring the comparison back to Skiles, he's been a coach for 13 years. He's obviously had a successful track record or he wouldn't keep getting jobs. He's doing exactly what the Magic asked him to do. And so, yes, there will come a time when the Magic make the playoffs and they're ready to take that next step, that question's going to come up, and maybe Skiles does this time take that step forward. The odds are that he's not. That's all we have to go off of is past results. And yes, past results are no predictor of future outcomes, but that's more than likely what's going to happen. Coaches have a 3-year shelf life anyway. Like the average coach is there for 3 years. So yeah, I mean we're gonna have to ask these questions again later, but for now, Skiles has worked out. He's brought the accountability. He's done everything that he's done in Phoenix and Milwaukee and Chicago before he came to Orlando, and he's gotten this team to competitiveness. And if that's the role, and I forget who said this, it might have been on the Ion Basketball podcast with Matt Moore and Zach Harper on CBS Sports. Certain coaches just have that role. Their role is, I'm going to make this team better and get them to the playoffs. And that's just my role as a coach. I'm not the championship coach. Some coaches aren't championship coaches. Some coaches are the development coaches. Some coaches are the get you to the playoff coaches. Some coaches are the championship coaches. Scott Skiles may just be a get you to the playoffs coach. And that's fine. Teams need that. The Magic need that. And so that's kind of where they were at. And I think that's, and Skiles, I think there was a nostalgic pull, whether the Magic don't want to admit it, but I do think that his tie to the DeVos family and to the Magic organization got him on Rob Hennigan's desk, and then I think Rob Hennigan decided independently that yes, Scott Skiles is the guy we want of the candidates we looked at, and Scott Brooks might have been one of them, and I don't think Scott Brooks would have been a bad choice at all. I think he got a bad rap in Oklahoma City.
Agreed.
He made that team play defense, so he would have done a lot of the same things I think he would have done in Orlando. I don't think he would have been as successful because the talent level obviously isn't the same, but I think he would have been a solid choice too. But you know, any coach the Magic would have hired, we'd be asking these questions after about 2-3 years, saying, okay, you've gotten this team to competitiveness. How do we get that team to championship competitiveness? And that's a tough step up for a lot of coaches. Like, you know, I'll freely say this. Phil Jackson is not a get you to the playoff coach. Although he did get those post-Shaq Lakers to the playoffs, a lot of that was talent with Kobe. He's a championship coach. He makes teams championship. He makes good teams great teams.
Yeah.
And he'll make bad teams good teams. But he's not necessarily a development coach. Like a lot of people in Orlando, especially, were saying, oh, they should have kept Stan Van Gundy for the rebuild. He would have been really good for those guys. I'm not sure about that. I don't know how Stan Van Gundy would handle a rebuild and handle a lot of young guys making mistakes, because that's not how he's made up. He's a coach that should be coaching in a playoff team and trying to make them great. That's the kind of coach he is. It's been interesting to watch him in Detroit with this team and kind of have to show some patience and deal with some losing, because that's not necessarily the coach I think he is. And that's just kind of the way the league works almost. There are stepping stone coaches. Jacques Vaughn was the coach you have at the beginning of your rebuild to hold guys' hands. Scott Skiles is the coach that gets you to the playoffs, and some other coach might be the coach that wins them a championship. I mean, that's just kind of the way I think things work.
No, I think you made some really good points there. Right. So I'm going to hit you with some of the best things about NBA London for the Orlando Magic.
Let's do that to close things off here, because I know you got to go. I've got some things I got to do as well. So let's hit me with the best things. Hit me with the best things for NBA London.
So number one, the Magic are going to probably get two full practices in, which during the NBA season is like gold dust. All right.
Yes.
They've been going through a defensive slump recently. Alfred Payton said at the Pacers game of the day that he should be ready to play in NBA London. So they're going to get him back. They're going to be able to integrate him back into the team. They're going to be able to kind of work on some of those defensive issues. And hopefully that can kind of really kind of re-kickstart their defense for the rest of the season. So that's number one. Number two is, even though you have tired minds, it is like a little mini All-Star break. It is a rest of the body. You only have one game. And you've got, you know, 5, 6, 7 days that you're in London. I'm not sure how many days it is, but either side of it for that's their only game. I know the Raptors, it's their only game in 9 days. It's such a break for them. I'm not sure what it is for the Magic. But
the Magic's last game will be Saturday. They play the Wizards at home Saturday, and then they don't play another game till Thursday. So it'll be 5 days.
5 days. So again, you're gonna get a little bit of rest of the bodies, which is going to help. And number three, with the team going, I think, is it the second worst losing streak in the East right now, something like that? With them going on the slump, it's going to be nice for them to get away, to get out of it, to kind of have a little bit of a fresh approach in it. They'll get out of kind of the rhythm of the NBA season, where you can find yourself, you go from losing 2 games in a row to 7 and you don't know what's happened. It's, you know, games coming thick and fast. I think it'll be good for them to get out of that. So I think this actually comes for a good time for the Magic. And a lot of the time, the younger teams seem to do well at NBA London. The veteran teams kind of don't really want to be there. The younger teams are eager. They bond really well. That, you know, I've read Vukovic's Q&A when I listened to that Brazil was kind of a really good bonding experience for the team. And I think that can be the same for NBA London again. So I think there's some really good points for the Magic that they can take from the trip. It's never been a close game in London just yet. I think for whatever reason, one team just struggles. I think halfway through the game, if you're down, there's kind of a lack of fight because there's no home court advantage for either team. And also you've traveled all that way, you're down at the half, and you're a bit like, let's just get this over and done with and let's get back to the US. I think there's definitely some good things for the Magic to come from the NBA London trip.
Yeah, and like looking at the schedule, I think it does come at a very, very good and a very important time for the team. You know, it does feel a little bit like the season is teetering a little bit with the way they played recently. And so, you know, getting a chance, I think you're right, getting a chance to kind of reset everything, have kind of a training camp attitude. They actually will practice Monday before heading over to London, is what they're scheduled to do. So they'll have a couple days of practice, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before Thursday's game to get ready. You know, I'm sure they'll be working out some jet lag as well. But it is a big opportunity for this group to kind of reset things, get another training camp feel, get a little re-energized. I think getting a win in this game would be really big for them moving forward. A, because Toronto is a pretty good team. You know, actually, I think I looked this up. Toronto is the only team the Magic have beaten that is currently above 500. So it is a very, you know, it is an opponent that they've played well against in the past even. Even though Toronto's beaten them pretty handily on a few occasions with Kyle Lowry going nuts, but this is a game I think they feel like they can win, they can prove themselves a little bit, and they can build some momentum heading into the rest of the season. You know, I know the Magic will hope for a win on Friday and Saturday as well, on both winnable games. You know, at Brooklyn, a team they've beaten twice already, and Washington, a team that they've come close to beating a few times but haven't beaten for several years now, and I know that's a game that should mean a lot to them as a divisional opponent. So, definitely, definitely some opportunity, definitely a chance to move forward and show off the game again. I think that's you know, ultimately what the NBA wants, and hopefully they can put on a good show and get back on the right foot. James, tell everyone where they can follow you on Twitter and all the sites you write for. I know you'll be writing for us. You'll be writing for Raptors HQ for the London game. You write for the Lottery Mafia. Where can people find you?
You can find me at @jplowright_NBA. Plowright spelled PLOWRIGHT. Then you can also find me, like I said, SB Nation Raptors HQ, where I'll be covering the Raptors side of NBA London, Orlando Magic Daily for the Magic Take, then as well as that, my own site, the Lottery Mafia, and then also Queen City Hoops as well, the ESPN Tree Hoop Network. So you can find me at all these places at various days and times. I should be tweeting out a lot of stuff next week. I think I'm really going to try and focus to try and get some one-on-one time with likes of Andrew Nicholson, Aaron Gordon, Hazonia, if I can, maybe some Tyler Harvey as well, if he goes.
Tyler Harvey's in Erie. He didn't sign with the Magic this year.
Did he not?
No, okay. They decided to
put him a year in the D League.
Yeah, give him a year in the D League. Yeah, exactly. So,
if you can
get 20 words out of Andrew Nicholson, I'll be very impressed though.
Well, the thing is, the likes of Fournier and Harris and those guys, Vukovic, they'll all be surrounded by media. Yeah. They'll normally be boring questions. I'm going to try to go for more. Some of the odd guys who I can generally get one-on-one. So hopefully get some interesting stuff with a bit more personality in the answers, not just scripted answers, which a lot, when you've got a big group of media around, you just get the same old blur, which they'll give to, you know, yes. Oh, it's a great experience to come out to London, blah, blah, blah.
But you got to get it.
Yeah. So no, I'll be tweeting a lot of stuff out. I'll be posting a lot of stuff out at Orlando Magic Daily. So yeah, make sure you check back. It should be a good week.
Yeah, and we're happy to have you on board for this week, James, and looking forward to your coverage as the team heads out to London next week. We still got some work to do before everyone heads out there. But looking forward to having you on board, James, and thanks for coming on and answering some questions about the London perspective and the NBA London game. I know everyone is, again, really excited for this game and this opportunity.
And before I go, I just want to do a shout out for the Magic fans are apparently having kind of a meeting on TGI Fridays at the O2 Arena prior to the London game. The meeting around 3 to 4 p.m. I've had a few people get in touch with me asking if I can kind of help promote that. Want to get as many UK Magic fans at TGI Fridays on the day of the game as possible. Meet up. Chat about the team, go watch the team together afterwards at the game. Everyone enjoy it.
I will definitely schedule a tweet out for that as well. I definitely want to try and get Magic fans together. I know I have a lot of UK followers. A lot of them have told me how excited they are for this game. And so if we can get a photo of that Magic community together, send that to omagicdaily @gmail.com or tweet it at me @omagicdaily. That would be fantastic. I'd love to see that. I love seeing the Magic fans everywhere around the world, I guess. And all that. Closing out here, this has been Philip Rossman-Reich of Orlando Magic Daily. Thank you guys for listening to the Orlando Magic Daily podcast. Remember, the Magic play the Toronto Raptors in London Thursday, January 14th at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. So that would be 8:30 England time, right? London time? Is it Greenwich Mean Time?
Greenwich Mean Time.
Greenwich
that's
Mean
right.
Time. The original time. Because that's where the meridian is. The game should be a very, very good one, obviously a very important one, and a great opportunity to showcase some basketball in a market that doesn't have a lot of basketball. For James, again, this has been Philip. Thank you guys for listening to the Orlando Magic Daily Podcast. You can now catch us on the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network of podcasts. Thanks to them for helping us out and hosting us, and hopefully everyone nationwide enjoys a little Magic discussion, a little NBA London discussion as well. So everyone here at Orlando Magic Daily, eventually I'll close this out. Thanks for listening to the Orlando Magic Daily podcast. We will catch you next time.